Scott Golden, also known as the Golden Boy, was considering what to do with the second half of his life. He was recently divorced and also was interested in a different career path. Then he found pickleball, and everything changed, as he is now a professional pickleball player and ESPN3 commentator for the Professional Pickleball Association Tour. Let's get to the intro to hear more from Scott. Welcome to the Pickleball Fire Podcast, where it's all about pickleball. Today, I would like to welcome to the Pickleball Fire Podcast, Scott Golden. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, Lynn. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and I'm so glad you're able to join me on the podcast. I know you do so many different things in pickleball, which we will get to here shortly, but I do like to always start off with how you started playing pickleball, how you found it, how long ago that was, and just, you know, how you got involved.
Absolutely. Sure. I have a unique story, just like a lot of people, and how they got involved with the sport of pickleball. Prior to October of 2016, I had really never heard of pickleball. Except in like middle school and high school, I lived up in Illinois. My dad was in the military, so we moved around a lot. And I do remember playing a game on a gym floor with a wiffle ball and a paddle, but I don't remember them calling it pickleball, to be real honest. So even though I maybe had some exposure to the game back when I was younger, I don't ever really remember being introduced to pickleball officially and them calling it that. So fast forward, I had played sports growing up my whole life. That was a big part of my life growing up. I had three brothers. There was four boys total, and we were always very active. We did anything from BMX bike racing to t-ball, baseball, football. Some of the sports were, you know, more traditional. I never played a racket sport, though. My parents never got us into tennis or competitive racquetball or table tennis. None of those sports were a big part of our life growing up, but I was always very athletic. In baseball, I played shortstop and pitcher. In football, I was a linebacker and a safety. So I was always somebody who enjoyed sports and was always very competitive. And then, you know, I got into my adult life. I owned a landscape company for 15 years, and I was married from 2008 to 2016. At the end of 2016, unfortunately, my marriage had dissolved, and we had decided to part ways in life. It was very amicable, but life was starting to be different. I was 32 years old. What I had known for the last 8 years was changing. And so I was kind of searching and reevaluating my whole life and what I wanted to do for the second half of my life. I thought about going back to school to become a coach, maybe thought about going back to school to do some other things. And one night I actually went to the park in our local park in Alabama, in Pelham, Alabama. And I stumbled on a gentleman who had a pickleball tutor machine. So anybody that's familiar with the sport knows either from tennis or pickleball, they have these machines that spit pickleballs at you. So of course that sound, Lynn, it was very distinct. And I just remember wondering in my brain, what in the world is that sound that I'm hearing? And he seemed very serious about hitting this pickleball. And so, you know, I asked him, hey, what are you doing? And instead of him just telling me what he was doing, he actually pulled me over there on the court and he gave me a pickleball paddle. He put it in my hand and we hit, you know, very, very simple hitting, just dinking over the net for about 15 or 20 minutes. And Lynn, I got to tell you, I was hooked from the word go, just like a lot of people, including yourself, who you just told me, you know, had the same experience when you found the sport. And that's how I got started. I probably played 48 hours out of the next 48 hours of my life.
You were definitely seriously addicted if you played 48 of 48 hours.
That may be a slight exaggeration, but I basically played for the next 3 days straight and I was on the courts as much as possible and fell in love with it, to be real honest.
So go ahead and take me a little bit more through the timeline. You talked about, you know, just how you got started in 2016. You did not have a racket sports background. You know, what happened between, you know, 2016 and here we are in 2021?
Well, a lot happened, to be honest, Lynn, and a lot of things that I'm very thankful for. at 32, like I said, I was starting over. I kind of wanted a new fresh start in something, in a new career. I had been in landscaping since I was 15 and had started my actual company with my twin brother, Chris. We started the company in 2015. I'm sorry. That's not accurate. That's when I got out of the business, really. We started it a lot earlier in 2005. And so I had been burned out from doing landscaping for so long. So when I found pickleball, I wanted to be involved. I wanted to do something in a big way. And anybody that knows me, Lynn, you and I are just getting to know each other, but anybody that knows you, me, will tell you that I go big or go home. Anything that I do, I don't do it halfway. I go all in. And so it was the same way with pickleball. I jumped into the sport and almost immediately started live streaming. I wanted to get the word out to people. I was very excited about finding out about this sport. It was very addicting in a good way. And so I started live streaming. There's a live stream out there that every once in a while, every year, it comes up on my memories on Facebook. And it's like the third day I'd ever played. I was live streaming and I was talking about the sport, even though, Lynn, I had no idea what I was really talking about at that time. I didn't know the rules really that well. It took me probably 3 to 4 weeks to get comfortable with some of the rules and things, but I was that excited about it. And so from October of 2016 to March 2nd of 2017, I was just playing recreationally, playing with the local people, but I really quickly realized I was pretty good. I was starting to quickly get better than most of the local people that I was playing against. I was winning a lot of the games. And so I thought, you know what? I want to compete against some people that I'm not familiar with. I want to try tournaments. So I started finding out about pickleballtournaments.com. I made a profile and registered. And then March of 2017, I played my very first tournament, and it was in Nashville, Tennessee. And I've got to give Don Stanley a shout out. Don Stanley is one of our top refs in the sport today. But at that time, he was pretty new to the sport as well. He had a son who passed away that was, I think, 16 or 17 years old, who died suddenly in a car crash. And so he did a tournament in his son's memory. And I'll never forget, it was the Logan Stanley Memorial Classic. And I was spoiled from that tournament because he went into meticulous detail, Lynn, about how he wanted to run that tournament and give people the best experience possible because it was in honor of his son. And so I got a great experience in my very first tournament. I played 3.5, had no racket sport background, like you mentioned, and I did well. I won 2 gold medals and 1 silver medal. And I really realized, like, you know what, I should move up and challenge myself. And so then I continued to push. And one of the personal goals that I made was to become a 5.0 player within a year. And I'm happy to say that I did that. I accomplished that, one of those personal goals. Not to say that I was a great 5.0 player at that point would not be accurate or truthful, but I was competing in some 5.0 tournaments by the end of that year and not doing bad at all. So I really, really loved the personal growth standpoint of what this sport offers to people. And someone like myself, Lynn, who doesn't come from that racket sport background, I would like to encourage anybody that picks this sport up with no tennis background or racquetball background or table tennis. I want to encourage them to keep working at it, keep working hard and keep working on yourself and your game, because you can do it. You can get to whatever level that you want to. You just have to be persistent and continue. And to this point, I've played over 100 tournaments since March of 2017, and have loved every step of the way.
That's really an amazing progression. I mean, many times you hear about, you know, Division I tennis players who come in at the 4.5 or 5.0 level, but really to go from, you know, somebody without a racket sports background to, a 5.0 player in, I guess, just over a year or so, that's really amazing.
Well, it's just from hard work, honestly. That was really what it was. I was very stubborn and wanted to find out ways to improve and get better.
How many hours were you putting in on the court typically each day?
Oh, gosh, Lynn. I was playing nonstop. I was playing sometimes 2-3 times a day for 2 to 3 hours a day. I remember a couple of times I played 14 straight hours in one day, just all day long. Maybe a lunch break, maybe a break here or there between, driving from different locations. Also, I mean, this is not something that I'm even bragging about, but this is what it takes to get to that next level. Where I was in Birmingham, we had 3 to 5, somewhere in the range of 3 to 5 players who were 4.5 and better. And as I was trying to improve, I recognized that I needed to get around some people who were not only better than me, but some different talents and different people. So I was driving, like on Saturday mornings, I would get up and I would drive 3 hours straight up 65 North up to Nashville, Tennessee to play with people who were better than me. And I did this on a regular basis, at least 2 times a month, sometimes more. I was driving to Jackson, Tennessee, which was 4.5 hours. Sometimes I would just drive over to Atlanta. It was 4 hours to Atlanta, and I would drive over there and spend the weekend. But that's what it took, you know, and I wasn't getting paid to do it. Nobody was in the car with me. I was just putting in windshield time and spending time on myself and getting better. And it paid off, you know.
Like you said, go big or go home. But I also, But I also did want to ask about, you know, what did your family think about all this pickleball? I mean, that's, you know, pretty crazy, especially driving those distances and stuff.
Yes. I mean, at first, my whole family was scratching their head as to why I was so obsessed with this sport. And for anybody that's outside the sport that has never either heard of it or has only played it maybe once or twice and doesn't know a lot about it, I mean, it's a very addicting sport. It's easy to fall in love with. You can pick the sport up within 15 to 20 minutes and be having fun. And they didn't quite get it at first. Now, I will say that my twin brother, I'm an identical twin, and my twin brother, Chris, he and I have a special bond. If you're not a twin, you probably wouldn't understand or follow what I'm saying exactly. But it's just a unique bond that you share with somebody else that you don't have with anyone else in life. And so he pretty much wanted to pick it up and he was willing to find out what I was doing and more about it. Even though I've always been kind of the black sheep in our family, I'm always the one that goes into things full blast like I do. So I think they were still wondering, like, okay, this guy, he's a little crazy. But I had a moment in 2018. In April of 2018, I'd been traveling for a year all over the country, putting my time in, putting my work in. And my parents were always, like I said, they were always supportive, but they were wondering if it was going to pay off. Why was I investing all these hours and traveling all this time for no real return on my investment? But I knew, Lynn, I knew that I was investing in something long-term that was going to pay off. I could just feel it, you know? And Lynn, I don't know if you, I mean, you and I just are getting to know each other, but I have a feeling that, you know, you started this podcast for a reason and you're not always sure the end goal, but you know that down the road, it should pay off and that you're willing to put that time in. It's no different for me or anyone else. You know, when you love something and are passionate, you're willing to put those countless hours in without seeing that return up front. And there's a little bit of faith involved and a little bit of trust that, you know, things will work out. And so circling back to this moment that I had, April of 2018, I'd moved on from my divorce and I was full steam into pickleball. And I had actually moved in with a girlfriend at the time. So we were sharing this house and I was traveling every weekend and she really didn't understand what I was doing. So you can imagine, you know, it was very difficult during that time, but I knew what I was trying to accomplish and I wasn't willing to waver on any of that stuff. So the US Open was coming up. And at this time I had a sponsor, a paddle sponsor, but they were not paying for my travel. They were just giving me free product. And I remember very vividly spending around $1,200 or $1,500 total between the flight, the hotel that I was going to have to stay at, the tournament itself was not cheap. So I remember putting all this money into going to the US Open. It was the very first time. And that girlfriend at the time, she begged me not to go, Lynn. I remember this very vividly. She was trying to talk me out of going. And I remember just saying, no, something's going to break for me in my career with this. Like this is, I need to be there. And I didn't back down. I, against her wishes and her trying to beg me not to go, I went. And money was a little tight at the time. Things didn't feel quite like they were just going to go smooth, but I knew I needed to be there, Lynn. And I went. And that tournament, that week I was there, I met Riley Burgess, who ended up sponsoring me with Monarch, who essentially is owned by Dick Sporting Goods. And that was the pivotal moment in my career where everything changed. And I came back from that tournament. I was rejuvenated. I was revived. And I knew, you know, I just knew things were going to work out. And I didn't know exactly how. I didn't know the details at that time. But now in 2021, looking back at that situation, I'm so thankful that I didn't give up on that dream, that I didn't talk myself out of going. And everything that's happened since then, it would not have been possible if it wasn't for that divine meeting with Riley that time at the US Open, where he sat down and he bought me lunch and he said, listen, you're exactly the person that we want to sponsor. And those moments in life, you just can't put into words that how much that changes everything going forward, you know, and where I am today is it's so crucial at that time that I didn't give up on that dream.
I just wanted to break in here and say, as pickleball players, we want to get better at the sport. And it was in a recent interview with Hella Spar, I realized I didn't even do 10% of what she talked about on the court. So I've signed up for a doubles course, and you may want to consider doing so too. You can get more information by going to pickleballfire.com/doubles. And just to let you know, I do make an affiliate commission if you purchase her course, and this helps to support the Pickleball Fire podcast. Now let's get back to the episode. That's an amazing story. And I believe now you even have a signature paddle by Monarch.
I do. And I'm so thankful for that as well. That was one of the big visions that I had for myself, that one of the personal goals for me was that I wanted to have a signature paddle. And my last name is Golden. So what better name for a signature paddle than the Golden Axe, right? I mean, it just kind of works.
Perfect. One of the things I wanted to get into a bit more is I think a lot of people who come into pickleball do have a racket sports background. And I think, you know, there are also maybe as many, especially at the lower levels, who don't. Tell me a little bit about how that was an advantage that you did not have a racket sports background. And also tell me why it might have been a disadvantage.
Oh, that's a great question. Honestly, I've thought about this a lot over the years that I've been involved 4.5 years, and I do a lot of teaching and clinics. And so I have to answer this question for a lot of people. A lot of people get discouraged that they don't have a background in a racket sport. So the advantage of not having the racket sport background is that you're learning pickleball from a clean slate. So you're very much pliable and moldable. And almost, I refer to people when they begin their journey in pickleball with no background in a racket sport, you're almost like Play-Doh. And the instructor or the teacher that's working with you can almost mold you in a way that's going to help you gain a huge foundation that's going to be beneficial for your long-term pickleball journey. But one of the disadvantages is that some of the shots that you have to execute in pickleball, you don't have those in your back pocket coming in. Oftentimes, also, one of the disadvantages to not coming from a racket sport background is what I would call court awareness. You don't have oftentimes that court awareness of where you should be moving to and the way you should execute the movement to go to the ball and how you set up for a shot, how you work with a teammate well. All those things are things that need to be learned and taught. And so those are kind of the drawbacks to not having that racket sport background. What I often find with tennis players is when they come into the sport of pickleball, you know, a lot of them wouldn't maybe admit it this way or whatever, but the best way to say it was they might come in a little cocky, thinking like, oh, well, I've got 25 years of tennis in my background. And they think that they can just go into pickleball and that it's going to be easy. Well, oftentimes they end up slicing through the ball too much, or they use too much topspin initially, and they dump the ball right into the net, and you can visibly see how frustrated they get because in tennis, it comes so easy for them. And then they put a paddle in their hand, which it doesn't have strings. They've got a hard plastic ball with holes in it instead of a solid, heavier tennis ball. And so the strokes are slightly different. So they can be adjusted, and they quickly do oftentimes adjust, but sometimes they're stubborn and it may take them a month or 2 months to really stop fighting that process of how to hit a pickleball versus a tennis ball. So does that make sense what I'm saying about that?
Absolutely. You know, having a racquetball background, my strokes just weren't going to change very much at all. I am definitely not one of those people when it comes to pickleball who is like Plato. Definitely not. What I found really interesting, though, in what you had to say was talking about court awareness. And that's something I have a little bit of a difficulty relating to, because I've been on a racquetball court probably since I was 17 years old. And so I'm used to being on a court. Can you give, you know, kind of as in-depth of an example as possible to kind of explain what court awareness is?
Absolutely. And I will say also that some people have more awareness in general than others. And some people have to learn how to be more aware and have to be taught. So each person is a little different in their ability to have the court awareness naturally, or if they have to learn it. So let me give you an example of what I mean by court awareness. Oftentimes when you're hitting, so we'll take you through the progression, or anybody that's listening through a progression in pickleball that everybody has to deal with. You've got a serve, you've got a return, and then after the serve and return, they both have to bounce. You cannot volley them out of the air. So after the person hits the return, and let's say that you and I, Lynn, are partners, and the return comes to you to hit the third shot. Having a lack of awareness would be if I just sprint right up to the non-volley zone without ever turning and checking up to see what you're going to do with that pickleball when you're going to hit that third shot. Are you going to drive it? Are you going to lob it? Are you going to hit a drop shot? Are you using touch versus power? So if I just sprint up to that non-volley zone with zero awareness of what's going on, number one, you might hit me with the ball. And I have seen that, where the partner actually gets hit with the ball because, Lynn, you might be driving the ball cross court, and I run right up into that zone and you hit me in the back of the head or the back of the body with the ball. The other thing is, you might want to hit a drop shot, but maybe you haven't developed your skill set quite enough. And so you lift that ball up a little too high and it goes out of that what we would call like a green light zone for you and I, and it goes more into that yellow or that red zone, which is attackable for the other team. I'm going to be the target 10 out of 10 times. They're going to blast me with that ball, and I'm going to basically be just a sitting duck. And so when I talk about a court awareness, sometimes people have to be taught that because they don't recognize initially themselves that, hey, maybe I should turn and watch what my partner is going to do with the ball before just sprinting up there to get blasted. So that's one example of what I mean by having court awareness.
That's actually a great example. And I was thinking about another one, see if this kind of fits too. I remember playing with somebody who had a tennis background, you know, brand new to the sport, but they had played a couple times. And I don't know if this you would consider this court awareness, but they still kept hitting the third shot in the air before it bounced.
Oh, yes. Yes. That is very much somebody who doesn't have the awareness just yet. And it's a combination of two things. One thing is that in tennis, the serve and volley is a very popular thing. So they transition over to pickleball, and the non-volley zone, or what we affectionately call the kitchen, is something foreign to tennis players. And they're not used to that. And so oftentimes they will take a little longer to get used to those new rules. I teach a lot of beginner clinics, Lynn, and one of the things that I really spend a good bit of time with in the beginning is explaining why these rules exist. I often find that if you just tell someone, do this, do that, and you don't give them the substance behind why they need to do this or that, it doesn't retain with them. They don't retain that information because it's just somebody regurgitating or following directions. And so I spend a lot of time with beginners explaining the two bounce rule and the non-volley zone and the underhand serve and how all three of those rules are in place for a specific reason to create an even playing field for the people on the court. So you can have essentially a 12-year-old playing with an 80-year-old and it will relatively be evenly matched. There is always going to be athleticism. There's always going to be people who have better skill set, but generally speaking, no one's going to have a clear-cut advantage because of the way the rules are designed. And that's what I spent a lot of time initially trying to explain.
At this point, then, are you mostly just teaching in the area where you live, or are you traveling over the country? Just give me a sense of where you're teaching.
Sure, absolutely. So I live down in South Florida now, Southeast Florida, on the East Coast of Florida, if you will. And I teach a lot of beginner clinics and local clinics here. I do a lot of one-on-one teaching and small group sessions, which is two people to four people. So I spend a lot of my time Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and often sometimes Thursday teaching. But then I often travel still for tournaments. And when I travel, I don't do this amazing scheduling all the time, but oftentimes when I know I'm going to be going to a certain area, I'll reach out to some local clubs and I'll make the trip beneficial for my finances as well, or try to make some money doing a clinic. But as you know, the world that we know now after March of 2020, it's very different. Traveling and doing things is very different than what it was prior to that. So I was doing a lot of traveling across the country and even looking at doing some international traveling outside the country and outside the US. Now it's changed a little. We're not quite doing as much of that.
You had mentioned just now, too, that you're still traveling to tournaments. Are you still doing the live streaming? What's your involvement in that now?
So that's a great question. That has evolved in my career as well. When I first started, like I said, I've been live streaming pretty much since day one. I've always had a passion for it. There's been so many times, Lynn, and you can really appreciate this if you've competed, or anybody that's competed in pickleball or in sports. Nobody likes to lose. And so because I have two passions, one passion that I have is competing. I'm 36 years old. I still love to compete at a high level, but I also have a passion for growing the sport at a grassroots level. I want as many people that I can influence. And with my platform that I have currently, I try to expose people to pickleball because I just know how it's changed my life. And so one of my other passions, like I said, is through live streaming, commentating, and giving other players also exposure and getting them out there so people can find out who they are. So oftentimes I would lose. Oh, it still gets me just, you know, when I talk about it. When you lose in the bronze medal match, you're so close to getting to that gold medal opportunity to play in front of, you know, all the people that want to see that. That gold medal match and you're competing at the last prize of that tournament, I often would lose. And then I would have to turn right around, put a smile on my face, let that loss go, and then set up my camera and stream the people who just beat me. And that really helped mature me. I had to grow and mature because that was not an easy thing to do. But because I recognized that the sport was bigger than just me and my feelings of losing. You know, I don't want to be overdramatic, but what I'm saying is, like, I realized even through that loss, you know, I had a duty and an obligation to give them the limelight and be willing to live stream their gold medal match, even though it was hard. I would oftentimes do it and I would have to talk about the match and the people that just beat me. And, you know, but I grew through that experience. And from doing that over and over and over for many years, I grew a network and people began to, what I felt like, pay attention to my live streams and give me feedback. And so through that journey, I was asked to participate in a couple of events. The World Pickleball Championship, Jan David was the first guy to really give me an opportunity and believe in me before anybody else did. And he gave me a chance to stream and commentate at a professional level for 40 plus hours in 2019. He gave me the real first opportunity. And from there, the other opportunities began to present themselves. And I was just willing to put myself out there. And now I commentate at a professional level And it's been an amazing journey. That side of the journey has been as rewarding for me, Lynn, as the competing itself.
It's great to hear that things have really come together for you so well. I mean, it's just amazing. But, you know, so is the sport. So just to finish up the Pickleball Fire podcast interview here today with you, Scott, tell me we already know which pickleball paddle do you use, but how did that get developed and what do you like so much about it?
So I use an elongated paddle. So what we decided was we'd give up a little bit in the handle length and we would gain a little bit more on the paddle surface itself so that we could have a little more reach. And for me personally, I'm a pretty aggressive player by nature. So that paddle fits my style. And I can also use it for singles as well as doubles. So it's a versatile paddle. So that's one of the features I really like about it. We're developing some new technology that's being patented. I can't talk about the specifics or the details of it, obviously, but it's really, really phenomenal technology that has helped take my game to a new level. I can see a clear difference in the way I play the shots and the pace of which the ball comes off my paddle. It's got a little more jump and pop. And those things are little things that can help you along the way in your journey. And so, but going back to when it was first developed, everything I feel like in life happens for a reason. And I've never questioned being sponsored by Monarch. They're the exact company that needed to sponsor me and that I wanted to be sponsored with. There's only two of us. They're not like everybody else out there because Selkirk, Paddle Tech, Onyx, they're all great companies. They're all been amazing companies to help grow this sport, but they're going to be sponsoring between, 100 and 200 players, anywhere from 4-0 players up to pros, where Monarch puts a lot of resources just into the two of us. So I had a lot of say in the way the paddle was made. They were already thinking because their theme with Monarch is the monarchy is like medieval themed. And so the axe was already being kind of developed in the early stages when I came on board. And then obviously we negotiated and I was able to say, hey, look, like I have a cool name, that last name, Golden. You're creating this paddle already that you kind of have a vision for. Why don't we marry the two and call it the Golden Axe? And so that's how it was kind of born and it just fit. You know, the marketing is easy with that. You know, it was a really good fit. And so that's kind of how it started. And they let me really give them a lot of feedback and they still count on me for a lot of feedback. They often send me a lot of their products to test and just like a lot of the pros that get to do that. It's a very fun thing.
Very interesting. And you know, you've got so much going on, but if somebody does want to get a hold of you, where's the best place to reach out to you?
Absolutely. On Facebook, I have a personal page, Scott Golden. You won't be able to miss it because it's got pickleball stuff all over the page. You'll be able to know it's me. The other Facebook page that I have is an athlete page, which is called Golden Boy Pickleball. And that's three separate words, Golden Boy Pickleball. And that's how you can access my athlete page. You can just like that. That one is not capped. My personal page is capped at 5,000 people, or everybody's is. The athlete page, as many people can like that as they want and follow. On Instagram, it's also Golden Boy Pickleball. As far as email, you can reach out to me through email. Also goldenboypickleball@gmail.com. I do have a Twitter account, although I don't really use that often that much right now. And I'm also in the process of developing a website and some other things, but that's going to be in the future. I don't have that right now. So,
all right. Well, great, Scott. That's lots of places where people can get a hold of you. And I do really appreciate you being on the podcast. Had a lot of fun. You're very energetic. And I just so appreciate you being on.
Absolutely. I thank you for your time as well. I love what you're doing with your podcast. You're a great facilitator. I've enjoyed the questions that you've been asking me, and you're so good at listening and just letting us, you know, talk about our journey. And I just really appreciate you.
Thanks again, Scott. I appreciate that. Thank you for listening to the Pickleball Fire podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to give it a 5-star review on Apple iTunes.